Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everyone, this is Jennifer, your host of the Where Are They podcast. Anyhow, just wanted to break in real quick here for 1 second and let everyone know that we will be at CrimeCon next month. Look for us in Las Vegas if you will be attending this year's CrimeCon. If you have not yet booked your ticket and are interested, you can use our discount code for 10% off. The code is WAT10. And if you are at CrimeCon, if you do find yourself walking the hallway of Creators Row, please come look for me, come look for the Where Are They podcast, and say hello. I'm super excited to not only be a part of all the festivities at CrimeCon, but to meet, hopefully, some of you while there. Now, without further ado, let's get into this week's episode. Cassie Compton, at age 15, was a typical teenage girl by most accounts. She enjoyed shopping, movies, hanging out with friends, going to the local fair, and spending time with her boyfriend. Cassie was also struggling a bit with mood swings and had been given antidepressants. This is not that abnormal, especially for a teen girl, but Cassie did have some extra added stress that involved a bit of a troubled home life. On Saturday, September 13th, 2014, Cassie spent the day at a nearby demolition derby in DeWitt, Arkansas. She went to this event with her boyfriend Hunter and his mom, Tracy. Cassie spent a lot of time with their family, and Tracy welcomed her with open arms, knowing that she wasn't always happy at home. Cassie's mother, Judy, had health issues and had recently become engaged to a much younger man, Brandon Lee Rhodes, a man that Cassie was not fond of. That day at the demolition derby was a fun day for Cassie, Hunter, and Tracy. They came home later that evening and Cassie spent the night. Hunter drove Cassie home the next day around 6 o'clock p.m. He watched Cassie go inside her home and then he drove off. He did not realize that was the last time he would see Cassie. That would be the last time anyone reported seeing Cassie. A few hours later, Brandon called Tracy to check on Cassie, but she told him that they had already taken her home, hours ago, in fact. Brandon then rode his bike to the police station in the town of Stuttgart, Arkansas, to report Cassie as missing, but he said they sent him home, telling him that he had to wait 72 hours. The next day, now Monday, September 15th, Tracy called to check in with the local police. She wanted to see what she could do to help. But the police had no record of Brandon ever even going to the police station. There was simply no evidence that Brandon had ever walked through their doors at all. And they stated they would have absolutely not turned him away. So Tracy made the missing person report on Cassie herself, which the authorities took right away. Cassie hasn't been seen or heard from since. Where is Cassie K. Compton? Cassie K. Compton was born on December 4th, 1997, to mom Judy Compton and dad Roy. Judy had two children already, although they didn't live with her, and Cassie would be raised solely by Judy. And her childhood was not always easy. Cassie's father, Roy, was convicted of inappropriate sexual conduct with a minor, lewd acts with a child, and indecent proposals to a minor. That minor being Judy's older daughter from a previous marriage. Within that same case, Judy herself was also charged, and somehow she said she needed to take a plea deal to just get probation, so that's what she did. She would plead guilty to sexual misconduct and thus became a registered sex offender herself. But still, Cassie, as a child, was described as happy, fun. She liked to be silly, she liked to make people laugh, and enjoyed being around other kids. It's pretty amazing how resilient and innocent children can be. But that would all slowly change as she grew into a teenager. Now, part of that is likely because, well, teenager. If you've ever raised a teenager, you know, some fly right through those years with minimal troubles, and others struggle. They struggle with self-identity, with confidence, and the hormonal changes causing mood swings, for some worse than others. Cassie was diagnosed with a mood disorder and she was given antidepressants, but she didn't like taking them. And her mom said she would often find Cassie flushing them down the toilet. Now, it's worth mentioning here, there is no official record that could be found on her exact diagnosis. I mean, there are privacy laws on health here in the US, so it makes sense that it's not readily available to the public. But some do question this diagnosis and what meds that she might have been given. Others close to Cassie were completely unaware that she had been taking any kind of medication, but we only have the word of her mother, Judy, on this. Now, Judy also had her own struggles with health. She was on disability. Again, no specifics were mentioned. And she has said that she has to wear a pain patch on most days to help her deal with her illness. This pain patch would often leave her sick in bed, sometimes days at a time, leaving Cassie to fend for herself on most days. And then, in 2014, when Cassie was 15 years old, her mom met and began dating Brandon Lee Rhodes. Brandon was only 25 years old at the time. Brandon soon moved in with them and he and Judy became engaged. Cassie was not happy about this, and on two occasions, she ran away from home. But both times, she returned, once within a day and one time after 3 days. Why Cassie was so unhappy and disliked Brandon so much isn't really clear. And Cassie was struggling with her own growth and independence while also dealing with this unhappy, stressful home life. Cassie also had troubles in school, so her mom agreed to unenroll her and let her homeschool herself. The plan was for Cassie to get her GED eventually. It's easy to see why Cassie sought refuge with Tracy and Hunter. Tracy said she really enjoyed having Cassie over to their house and they all liked spending time together. Tracy knew of Cassie's struggles and was always there for her, as was Hunter. Tracy and Hunter's home became an escape for Cassie. The disappearance. The weekend of September 12th, 2014 was a typical one by most accounts. Cassie went over to Hunter's house, and on Saturday, September 13th, they traveled to DeWitt, Arkansas to watch a demolition derby. Both Hunter and Tracy, Hunter's mom, described the day as just a fun time together hanging out. They returned home later that evening, and Cassie would spend the night at their house. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Tracy was happy to provide a place of refuge for Cassie and Cassie's troubles at home. So Cassie stayed at their house most of the day on Sunday, just hanging out, and then Hunter finally drove her home around 6 o'clock p.m. When he got to Cassie's house to drop her off, he saw Brandon in the driveway. He noticed that Cassie didn't speak to him, instead walked right by him and went inside the house. Now, in the home, Cassie's mom was sick in bed. She does recall hearing Cassie come in. She heard the movements, she heard some noise, but she never actually spoke to her. Cassie would text Hunter around 7 o'clock p.m. This is about a little less than an hour after he dropped her off. And she told him that she was going to be walking to the store for cigarettes. Now, Cassie was only 15, so what was the plan? Did she know a store clerk who would sell them to her? Was she hoping to find someone there who would buy them for her? Or was someone maybe going with her? In the state of Arkansas in 2014, you do need to be 18 to buy cigarettes. Ironically, or maybe not, around that same time, Brandon told Judy that he was leaving to go to the store also. He said he needed cigarettes. He did not mention Cassie at all. A couple of hours later, around 9 o'clock p.m., Brandon called Tracy to ask about Cassie. He claims that he didn't see her get home and he wondered when she would be home. Although Hunter distinctly recalls him being outside when he dropped Cassie off, he was certain that Brandon had to have noticed Cassie. Brandon would call Tracy two more times that night, stating that he was worried about her. By that last phone call, Tracy told Brandon that if he was so worried, he needed to alert the police. He needed to call the police and report her missing, to which he then told her that he had already rode his bicycle up to the police station, but they would not take a report telling him that he had to wait 72 hours. First, it isn't unusual that Brandon would ride his bicycle. He did not have a driver's license, but he did sometimes drive Judy's car without her knowing, and Judy believes that she heard him take the car that night when he said he was going to the store. Sometime later in the evening, after 9 o'clock p.m., Judy heard Brandon come home. She heard him go immediately to the bathroom where she could hear him throwing up. He was sick in there for quite some time. In fact, Judy said it was probably a couple of hours. Once, Judy decided she better get up and go check on him, but when she tried to get up and out of bed, she became lightheaded and had to lay back down. Now, the timeline is a little bit murky, but from all accounts, let's recap what happened on September 14th, 2014. It was a Sunday, and Cassie spent the day with Hunter at his house. His mom, Tracy, was also there. Around 6 o'clock p.m., Hunter drove Cassie home. He watched her go inside the house, walking right by Brandon. At 7 o'clock p.m., Cassie texted Hunter that she was going to the store to buy cigarettes. Around that same time, or a little bit after, Brandon told Judy that he was going to the store to buy cigarettes. Judy had been in bed sick this whole day, and she had known that Cassie had come home. She had heard her, but she never saw her. Around 9 o'clock p.m., Brandon called Tracy, checking in on Cassie. She told him that Hunter had dropped her off hours ago. Brandon claims he didn't see her. After a while, and a couple more calls to Tracy, Brandon finally told her that he rode his bike to the Stuttgart Police Department to report Cassie is missing. But they told him he had to wait 72 hours before he could report her as a missing person. The following morning, Monday morning now, September 15th, Tracy was worried enough about Cassie that she herself called the Stuttgart Police Department to see what else she could do to help. They informed her that they were completely unaware of Cassie's disappearance, that no one had come to the police station the night before to report her missing, and they also said they certainly would not have turned Brandon away, telling him to wait the 72 hours. Brandon, however, stands by his story that that's exactly what they did. So the official missing persons report was taken that Monday morning when Tracy called. Cassie K. Compton had disappeared. The search and investigation. Initially, Cassie was labeled as a runaway. This is generally the case when teenagers go missing, but add in the fact that Cassie had left home twice before, staying gone for a couple days each, and the fact that it was widely known that Cassie was unhappy at home, everyone really truly believed she had run away. She fits the stereotype to a T. Well, everyone believed that except Hunter and his mom, Tracy. Cassie knew she could always go to them. She often did. If something happened to make life so unbearable that Sunday night at home, they were both certain that Cassie would have reached out to them. At the very least, she would have answered their calls or texts or let them know what her plans were. But all their calls and text messages have been going unanswered since that text Cassie sent Hunter at 7 p.m. Now, Cassie's mom, Judy, was distraught, and she did go to the media to beg for help and for answers. But Brandon's story changed a couple of times. First, he had claimed to have not seen Cassie. Then he changed his story a little bit, stating that, yes, he does remember seeing her. He was cooking dinner that night, and she asked him if he had any smokes. He said he didn't have any, so Cassie said she was going to go to the store herself and try and get some. Brandon said that a short while later, he also went to the store, but he never saw Cassie. Judy believed Brandon, stating that he would never hurt Cassie, he would never do anything to her, and he would not lie to her about it. But the public opinion did not agree with her. And soon after noticing the different versions of Brandon's story, law enforcement was also skeptical, and they finally began a full-fledged investigation into Cassie's disappearance. Reports came in of people seeing Brandon riding his bike around a local cemetery the day after Cassie vanished. That cemetery was searched, but nothing was found. Additional clues were few and far between, although most clues or most tips that came in were pointing towards Brandon and Brandon's odd behavior. On October 3rd, now a few weeks after Cassie disappeared, authorities confiscated both Brandon's and Judy's cell phones. On October 4th, whether this was related to the phone seizure or not, law enforcement said they received information and they were going to search an area near the Elmira Airport. This was labeled a recovery mission, but no further comments were ever made on that. Now, is that a coincidence that that happened one day after the seizure of the cell phones? Authorities have said they're focusing their search now in an area of Casco, Arkansas, in an area of Elmira, Arkansas. Now, Casco is about 15 miles from Stuttgart, about a 20-minute drive, and Casco to Elmira is about another 20 minutes. While Casco is east of Stuttgart, Elmira is south of Casco, forming a triangle if you look on the map at these three cities. There is that small airport that was searched in that vicinity, and it was said that a local cemetery was searched as well. Law enforcement also searched an area known as the Bayou Bridge. Nothing from any of those searches brought them any answers as to Cassie's whereabouts. A week later, a week after their cell phones were seized, Judy kicks Brandon out of their home. This happened on October 11th. Brandon allegedly leaves and he begins squatting at a vacant house, an act for which he would be arrested on October 19th. On October 12th, an organization known as Class Kids brings volunteers into the area to search. They specifically concentrate on an area where Brandon was known to ride his bike. This included some local ponds and the local railroad tracks. They also searched two dump stations, but again, nothing was found. Judy's car would also be seized and searched. Again, no evidence of Cassie was uncovered. Police have stated that neither Judy nor Brandon are ruled out as persons of interest, although public opinion on Judy seems divided. Now, Brandon has been in and out of prison, but during an investigation, a private detective and a reporter teamed up to try to get answers from him. Now, this part is really interesting, and they put out a podcast in 2019 called Timeline with some more of these details. But Brandon would write a very odd letter to this reporter, Kayla Lafferty, claiming that he wanted to come clean. Brandon was in jail, booked on a charge of conspiracy to commit murder. This is completely unrelated to Cassie's case, but rather something that happened at a local bar one night. He was talking with friends or people he knew, and a discussion came up about committing a murder. And one thing led to another. Now, this reporter that was investigating this case tried a few times to visit Brandon in jail, but has been unsuccessful. In 2018, Judy would marry a man by the name of Mike Kimsey, and she would become Judy Kimsey. She still goes public occasionally with pleas for her daughter. She still does not think that Brandon Rhodes had anything to do with her daughter's disappearance. Judy does believe that Cassie was the victim of foul play, but more likely a crime of opportunity, such as a passerby who saw her walking that evening on her way to the store. Sadly, Cassie's story goes relatively quiet in the next several years, but her case is revived again in early 2021 when a TikTok video goes viral. In this video, a young girl is seen in the back of a car with a bruised face, runny makeup, and looking completely disheveled. People immediately believed it was Cassie. They started calling in tips to law enforcement and even posting like crazy on Judy's Facebook page and all over social media claiming that they believed this girl was Cassie. The video was posted by a man named Miles Baker in Minnesota. And despite people's absolute certainty that this was Cassie, it was discovered that it was not, as the girl in the video would come forward shortly after. Now, the girl in the video was not happy about being mistaken for Cassie and was quite upset that people were constantly reaching out to her to make sure she was okay or find out what was going on with her. And she posted many videos expressing such. However, this incident did help revive Cassie's case in the media. Stuttgart, Arkansas. Cassie's disappearance happened in the small town of Stuttgart, Arkansas. Now, taking a look at this area can help paint a picture of the search efforts and help kind of zero in on places of interest. Stuttgart is located east of Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a small town with a population of just over 8,000 residents. It is known primarily as an agricultural town. Stuttgart is referred to often as the rice and duck capital of the world, bringing in people from all over for waterfowl hunting, which is concerning since this points to the area as having a lot of open fields and water sources. So let's take a closer look at the triangle of focus in Cassie's case. This triangle, this area between Stuttgart, Arkansas, Elmira, Arkansas, and Casco, Arkansas, was identified by law enforcement due to phone ping locations. Although they've never specifically said which phones, other than identifying Brandon's as one of them. The airport which was searched is located within this triangle. This airport was searched by law enforcement as well as volunteers. It's about a 15-minute drive from Cassie's home. Now, there is some belief that Brandon took Judy's car that night, despite him not having a driver's license. Judy did say she thought she heard him take the car. And Brandon was said to have been gone for a couple of hours. The airport area is easily accessible, and if Brandon had taken Cassie there, he would have had plenty of time to do whatever it was he intended to do. But again, that area was searched by law enforcement as well as volunteers, and nothing was uncovered. This triangle of focus, these three towns, are relatively close to each other. You could probably go from town to town in about 15 minutes each. In fact, you could probably drive the whole triangle itself in under an hour. But what does this area really look like on the ground? Now, most of what I've seen of this area walking the streets just via Google Maps and Google Earth is wide open fields, very sparsely populated, and a lot of empty spaces. There are some small retention ponds scattered about, although nothing truly significant. Now, beyond the triangle area, there is a lot of wildlife preserve land and wild game areas. Have any of those areas ever been searched? I don't know. Every year, hunters are made aware to keep an eye out for anything unusual and suspicious. And this doesn't just go for Cassie's case in Stuttgart, Arkansas. It goes for every missing person case across the country. And honestly, in many cases where a missing person has vanished into the wilderness, it is a hunter or hunters who come upon them. Now, I do want to mention there is one other unsolved missing person case from Stuttgart, Arkansas, and that is the case of Michelle Owens. Miranda Michelle Owens has been missing from Stuttgart, Arkansas since April 19th of 2015. She was 40 years old at the time, and she is said to be developmentally disabled. Now, Miranda, who was known more often by everyone as Michelle, spoke to her sister at 4 p.m. on April 19th. When the sister tried to call Michelle back at 6 p.m., Michelle didn't answer. This was very unusual for Michelle, who was always on her phone and always answered, especially when it was her family calling. Michelle's family tried to report her missing soon after, but was met with resistance from law enforcement, who told them they had to wait 48 hours before they could report her missing. Now, immediately, what struck me as odd about that is in Cassie's case, which happened just 7 months prior, Brandon claimed that they told him 72 hours. They told Michelle's family 48 hours. Neither of those statements are true. So I find it completely odd that they were both told something different and they were both told something wrong. The department press officer at the time stated to the media that that is standard protocol with any case. Now, as I had mentioned, this is in direct opposition to an Arkansas state law saying that cases be investigated immediately. There is no wait time. When Michelle went missing, she was wearing blue jean shorts and a blue shirt. She does wear plastic-rimmed glasses. She likes wearing colorful rainbow-colored clothing. She wears her hair in braids, and she has a large overbite. She stands 5'6" tall and weighs around 120 pounds and is described as an African-American woman. Michelle is described as funny and loving and well-known in the community. Michelle also has a son. Many people in Stuttgart would remember seeing Michelle riding her bike or walking through her small town. Now, a couple of things stand out to me in Michelle's case. She was last known to be biking or walking, as was Cassie. The last we know, or we were told, Cassie went for a walk and was never seen again. Michelle also either went for a walk or a bike ride and was never seen again. Michelle also vanished just 6 to 7 months after Cassie did, both disappearing from a very small town of around 8,000 residents. Now, while the cases are not said to be related or connected in any way, and there's no known connection between Michelle and Cassie, it's kind of hard to ignore the fact that these two women went missing 6 to 7 months apart under kind of similar circumstances. Now, I have to wonder, too, where was Brandon Lee Rhodes when Michelle disappeared? He was said to have been in and out of jail in the months that followed Cassie's disappearance. Was he incarcerated on April 19th? Brandon Rhodes is currently incarcerated on unrelated charges. He is considered a person of interest in Cassie's case, but what about Michelle's? Theories and possibilities. While one theory stands out above the rest, according to most everyone involved in the case, the truth is, we just don't know what happened to Cassie or where she is. There's no forensic evidence, there's no DNA, there's really nothing aside from some strange stories and circumstantial coincidences to uncover what happened to Cassie. So there are a few different possibilities in her case. Theory number one, let's start with the most talked about theory, foul play at the hands of Brandon Lee Rhodes. Now, his stories have changed. Everything he has done or said since she went missing is suspicious. And for some reason, Cassie did have a strained relationship with him. It's extremely odd that he changed his story. It's extremely odd to me that he left the house shortly after she did. And law enforcement has also been suspicious of his stories, enough to focus searches on the areas where his cell phone pinged. And why would his cell phone ping in those areas when he was supposed to be simply just running to the store? Brandon is incarcerated now, and he has made some odd statements. Now, as I mentioned, the reporter from KATV News, Kayla Lafferty, has produced a podcast called Timeline on the case of Cassie Compton. And in this podcast, she talks about her efforts to reach out to Brandon and talk to Brandon. She sent him a letter when he was in prison, and he actually responded, stating that he wanted to talk to her. He wanted to come clean. He wanted to clear his conscience. And he wanted to give Judy some closure. Now, that sounds ominous. And I'm pretty sure we're all thinking the same thing when we hear that. So Kayla was very anxious to get in and talk to Brandon, understandably so. However, when she reached out to him again, he changed his mind, he changed his tune, and he changed his story. He completely recanted what he said, refusing to speak anymore. He is definitely a strange character. Anyone who's ever talked to him or had any run-ins with him, law enforcement, those involved with him at the jail, will state that he often says things that don't make sense. He is very odd. He is very unusual, and it's really hard to believe anything that he says. He's also a known criminal. He's committed several crimes in the past, but does that mean that he did something to Cassie and that he has been successfully able to conceal her all these years? Theory number two, the runaway theory. Cassie had a history of running away, and she was known to be unhappy at home. Is it possible that she ran away? Sure, it's possible, especially if something was going on involving Brandon, or maybe even stuff that we don't even know about. But I don't know how likely I believe this theory to be. Knowing that she did have people in her life that she could confide in and that she could trust, mostly Hunter and his mom, Tracy, who had always been there for her. Cassie also had an older brother and sister that, although they didn't live with her, she stayed in contact with them and often confided to them. Would she completely cut off contact with those people to get away from her life in Stuttgart? Maybe she really just needed to get away from Arkansas completely. Maybe she didn't want anyone to know where she was. Maybe she didn't want to be found. Maybe she felt like she even needed to keep that a secret from Hunter and Tracy. Cassie was 15 years old when she disappeared in 2014. If this is the case, if she did run away, Cassie would now be an adult and should be free to come forward and speak her piece and tell her story and not be confined to the home life that she once had with her mom and Brandon. Theory number three, foul play at the hands of a stranger or someone we haven't identified yet. This is what Cassie's mom, Judy, believes likely happened to her. Could someone have seen a young girl walking down the road alone and just saw an opportunity? Could they have taken her away from the area completely, possibly harming her in some way, possibly for trafficking purposes? Could they have taken her to another part of the country where she's unrecognizable, where people don't know that she's a missing person, or perhaps left the country somehow with her altogether? But if that is what happened to Cassie, who could have done it? There were never any witnesses that saw Cassie walking, that saw Cassie that night at all. It's as if Hunter dropped her off at home and she vanished into thin air. And do any of these theories apply to the case of Michelle Owens? Authorities have never stated that they believe the cases of Michelle or Cassie are related in any way, but it is odd that these two vanished from such a small town just months apart from each other. So what do you think happened to Cassie K. Compton? Cassie K. Compton disappeared on September 14th, 2014 from Stuttgart, Arkansas. She is described as being a Caucasian girl, 5'3" tall and weighing around 100 pounds at the time she went missing. Cassie's hair was dyed blonde at the time. She has blue eyes and she might have been wearing a blue spaghetti strap top, blue and white plaid shorts, blue and gray cowgirl boots with 2-3 inch heels. Cassie has a dark-colored, heart-shaped birthmark on her upper left arm and a scar on the left side of her face, beginning at the cheek near her nose. If you know anything about the whereabouts of Cassie Compton or have any information at all regarding her case, please contact the Stuttgart Police Department at 870-673-1414. This also goes for the case of Michelle Owens. If you have any information about the case of Michelle Owens, also please reach out to the Stuttgart Police Department. Again, that number is 870-673-1414. I will also put a link in the show notes to the podcast produced by KATV reporter Kayla Lafferty. You can hear some interview clips and dive a little bit deeper into Cassie's story. Let's keep sharing Cassie's name, her face, her story. Let's help get Cassie brought home. If you have made it this far into the podcast and would like to help our show reach more people, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. Let's get these stories out there. Let's get these names recognized by everyone. And a huge, huge thank you to those who have done so already. It truly does help these shows. It helps these people get the recognition that they need. If you are interested in all of our episodes completely ad-free, you can join us over on Patreon. Not only are all of our episodes ad-free over there, you can also find the occasional bonus episodes as well. Our latest bonus episode talks about the disappearance of Sharon Ivy Jones, a mother who vanished after attending a friend's wedding. She left that wedding alone, drove off, and never showed up to pick up her daughter afterwards. Sharon's case is still unsolved. The link to our Patreon can be found in the show notes. And a big thank you and a huge welcome to our newest patrons, Heather and Shannon. Thank you so much for supporting our show and supporting our mission. If we do have any case updates or news on any missing person cases, we will share that over on our socials first. You can find the Where Are They podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And you can also find all of our episodes in video format over on YouTube. This is a great way we can share photos of the missing and any other relevant pictures, such as evidence photos, maps, etc. Those links will be in the show notes, or you can always just search for the Where Are They podcast. If you do want to recommend a case to me, maybe a case local in your hometown that needs more media coverage, please reach out to me via the socials anytime or email me at canwefindthem@gmail.com. There is also a contact us form on our website. Our website is wherearethepodcast.com. Thank you again so much for listening to Cassie's story today and helping us keep her story out there. Please share, and let's get more eyes on her case. Cassie needs to come home. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons story. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.